Well, up next will be our third Who's Behind the Secret Door guest. I'm one for one. Let's see if I can go two for one. Well, give it a try when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's open up the secret door. And come on in, whoever you may be. Welcome.
Well, hello, Georgie boy.
Well, hello there. And this is going to be intriguing. Talk a little bit more.
Well, you may know me from such things as things that Rosemary Ellen Guiley also liked.
Aha. Is this Karen Dolman?
No, it's certainly isn't, but I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, Karen's a great person. Matter of fact, I'm going to be with her this weekend in Guyaville doing a Beyond Belief television shows. Let me guess again.
Beyond Belief?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Have you been on it? Have you been on it with me?
I have.
Oh, boy. Let's see. When was that? How many years ago?
Well, Santa was on it at the same time.
That was quite a while ago.
Yes, it was.
Let's see. Who might this be? I don't know if I'm going to get this. I'm coming up on my time limit, too.
Well, I can be found cavorting with mermaids, pokas, and banshees, if that's any help.
You're into the strange and unusual, aren't you?
I am.
Well, you're not Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's joined the hereafter. So that's not you. You're not Karen Dolman. You're not Heidi Hollis. I'm ruling people out. You're not the psychic twins. Gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue. I'm going to pass. Who are you?
It's Varla Ventura.
Varla! Varla! Very good.
It was very hard to do that voice, so I think your first guest really inspired me to just go all in.
One win, two losses for me tonight. Well, very good. Good. How you been?
I've been wonderful, thank you. It's been challenging times for everyone, but I've been doing well.
Any new works coming out?
I have several things in the works, nothing to print yet. But I've been doing a couple of different projects, so always kind of studying the realm of the weird. I'm actually currently delving pretty deeply into some weird plants and poison gardens. That's kind of my latest fetish, so that's been a lot of fun and a good thing to do when you're stuck at home, mostly.
Well, as everybody seems to be these days, I'm headed back to Los Angeles next week. We've got to go to Denver to do our Beyond Belief shows, and then I'm going to stop off in L.A. for a couple weeks. And it's a ghost town out there, they tell me.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a blessing in its own way.
Oh, of all the strange you've done, Varla, and you've handled many, what fascinates you the most? Is it the seances, the hauntings? What is it?
Yeah, it's probably a little of everything. I do love a good ghost story, but I'm also quite fascinated with sort of that realm of the magical creatures. Everything in the fairy realm, all these sort of strange, the vampires, the cryptids. I find that I am constantly struggling with whether or not I believe or I want to believe. Or I've had encounters, all kind of, you know, things go through my head. But I also really love what they give us as people, you know, just this idea of believing in something that you can't see. And so I think that's also my fascination with the paranormal, is just to kind of think outside the tangible, which I think we all need to do once in a while or every night.
What does this tell you about the unusual when so many mysteries are still out there, Varla?
Well, I mean, it's the ongoing mystery. I think, like, with a lot of the paranormal, the whole spiritualist movement and the sort of obsession with what happens after death and the attempts, the cryptid world, the attempts to see what's beyond the veil or on the other side or in the same dimension or parallel dimension, all of the things that you explore on Coast to Coast and I explore in my books, I think they all have this just really vital role in trying to, I think that never-ending question, I think we'd get bored if we actually had the answers. Right, we would just eventually just say, oh, well, there's got to be something else. So I think that seeking is part of the pleasure of it. Although I love hearing people's theories on things and listening to people's stories and reading their accounts of the things that they've experienced, I think that's one of the most beautiful things. But I also feel very, I think I'd be disappointed if somehow these mysteries were solved.
Varla, what about werewolves? What have you come across with that?
Well, werewolves are one of my favorite topics. I think probably the thing that I find most compelling about the werewolf is that the shape-shifting element of the werewolf, the idea that it's a human that transforms into something that is more beast-like. And one of the things that I find the most fascinating is this theory that was kind of put forth by this man named Sabine Baring Gould, who is known for the hymnal Onward Christian Soldiers. He was a reverend who thumped around England and Scandinavia in the late 19th century, and he kind of wrote this massive volume about werewolves that's pretty unknown. Not a lot of people have read it because it's not very widely in print, and it's very long, and it has a lot of strange tangents because he just sort of gave in to his own thought. He didn't write it necessarily to publish it because he was writing other spiritual works at the time. But one of the things he talks about is this element of sort of rage or kind of a trigger moment for people where you see red, you just go mad, you just are so angry. And a lot of us can relate to that. We've had that feeling at some point in our lives, even if we maybe don't have full recall, could have been as a toddler, could have been last week. And with that, he sort of puts forth this idea that we all have the capacity as humans to transform into something more beast-like. And I think that that really plays into the idea of a werewolf and werewolves in popular culture, but also just historically. In many cases, you had werewolves that were, werewolves kind of went the way of the witch trials. If you weren't a witch, you were probably accused of being a vampire or a werewolf.
Well, I got to tell you, lycanthropy is the ability for people to turn into wolves, right?
Yeah, and that's an actual medical condition. It's a recognized medical condition. There's two versions. One is that if somebody becomes very hirsute, so you might think of like the bearded lady or some other kind of quote-unquote sideshow act where a person is incredibly hairy, has an excessive amount of hair, and that's actually a hormonal imbalance that creates that, and, you know, it's the living werewolf. But there's also this idea, this disease of lycanthropy that is essentially where you believe yourself, and you can actually, you know, get this diagnosis that you believe you're a werewolf, you believe you're a danger to others, especially at the full moon, and you are often locked away because of it, and you seek treatment because of it.
It's a real disease, isn't it, Varla?
It's a real disease, and it's interesting because the same giant volume about werewolves, which is called Werewolves, he actually talks about some antidotes to, there were lycanthropic streams that you would drink from and they would transform you into a beast. And then there are also certain plants that you can eat as an antidote to kind of calm you down or bring you back into reality. But I think the werewolf just poses this ongoing problem for us as humans. And it's this, that we feel sort of sympathetic toward the werewolf because we feel that the werewolf is not changing on its own accord, that it's something that it's sort of cursed with, and so it transforms, and it doesn't mean to hurt anyone. Whereas something like a vampire, you would go after that. That's a sort of more of a lustful curse, if you will, and something that people might seek out or romanticize. But the werewolf, we almost feel sorry for. And I think that's very interesting, too.
What are pukas?
Pukas are one of my favorite members of the kingdom of fairy. And pukas are the trickster fairy.
Uh-huh. So, like little yeah. evil leprechauns or something?
Not so much leprechauns. Leprechauns have their own class. But I will say this. In the kingdom of fairy, there are many overlaps in terms. So I've known people who say, oh, well, you know, my Irish grandmother referred to all fairies as pukas. But by definition, a puka is a trickster fairy that usually transforms from as an animal, often a horse, occasionally a goat, and pretty frequently a rabbit. And these are not necessarily harmful fairy creatures, but they do take you on an untoward path, sometimes towards the cliff edge. And I think they appear to sort of shake you out of your routine and sort of wake you up. Don't stay at the pub too late, because if you go down that lane, the puka might get you. And there are some pretty intense accounts of a horse-like creature appearing from the night and sort of coming full speed up behind someone and sort of throwing them on the rider onto their back and then taking off on this midnight ride that scares the person to the quick and then eventually just sort of toppling them into the ditch beside the lane and then saying, they wake up the next day and say, I don't know how I got here, but the puka.
We get a lot of stories, Varla, of fairies out in the woods. Do you remember that incredible photograph? And they look like cutouts of the Cottonlea fairies.
Oh, yes, very much.
But the little girl and the little fairies are all around her. They look like cutouts, but they do look pretty realistic, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're fascinated with the idea of fairies. And for me, I think that was my first foray into the world of fairies, with something more sort of sweet and magical. But I quickly realized, even as a young kid, that there were a lot of more mischievous, ominous, and sometimes frightening things in the fairy kingdom. So those sort of pretty little things that flit about the garden are sort of just scratching. It's like the gateway fairy, you're just like sort of scratching the surface, trying to entice you. And then this entire realm is sort of opened up to you.
Of all the things you investigate, the pukas, the fairies, the werewolves, seances, hauntings, what fascinates you the most?
I think probably of anything, the most fascinating thing to me are banshees, because they really straddle the world between ghosts and fairies. Technically, banshee, it means of the fairy mound.
And they don't sound friendly. They don't sound like good people or good entities.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you, in defense of banshees, it depends on how you look at it. Because they're not necessarily, there aren't a lot of accounts of banshees bringing death or mayhem upon someone. They are more like warning entities, so they let you know that someone you love is going to die. So it's not like really their fault that someone dies. They're just kind of giving you the warning, but they are very feared, and rightly so. Nobody wants to hear the scream of the banshee or see the banshee appear. And actually, last summer, I was traveling in Ireland, and I stayed in this castle that had a banshee attached to it. And of course, being me, I was hoping that the banshee would appear sort of secretly. It didn't, which is probably for the best of my traveling companion.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a lot of, I go back and forth on the idea of banshees. Now, there are counterparts to banshees. And there was a very well-known writer named Elliot O'Donnell, who was an Irish writer, and he wrote about fairies and pukas and things like that. He wrote around the same time as William Butler Yeats, but he had a kind of a distinct difference in that he, as a child, had had numerous paranormal experiences and had grown up in a haunted house. And so he had more of an inherent sort of open-mindedness about the possibilities of these things being true, whereas a lot of other people, when they were riding around the countryside gathering the stories from the people, including Yeats, they had a tinge of that educated sort of down the nose, these are the stories of the peasantry. Not to disparage Yeats, much of what I know about the Fairy Kingdom comes from his works. But Elliot O'Donnell had a very unique perspective that he wrote a lot about ghosts, he wrote a lot about banshees, and he really kind of explored the idea of banshees in other countries, or were they uniquely Irish, and whether or not they were inherited by families or they were inherited by place, or did people inherit the ability to see the banshee and communicate with the banshee, or was it a little bit of everything? So I find that idea to be very kind of an unanswerable question in many ways. But the other thing I love is on the same trip, I just happened to be walking down a road and two little old ladies who I thought really ought to be sitting having tea started stuffing a banshee in front of me. And see, my ears perked up and I was trying not to be too nosy, but it's like, wait, did that woman just say banshee? And she starts telling the story of this banshee that's supposed to come out of this cave near this archaeological site that we were walking away from. And, you know, I'd read all the literature, and I had read that it was this, the origins of Halloween, and that there were all of these entities that came out, but I had never heard a banshee story specifically associated with this place. To hear these lovely women, you know, just sort of goofily talking about it, and I'm just listening thinking, I love this place. Like, I'm just walking down the street and I want to have tea with these women and hear about their banshee story.
We're with Varla Ventura. I've got one right, two wrong. She was one of the two that I got wrong, but I think I was close. I was right on the tip of guessing you, wasn't I?
I think so. I could have gone easier on you, but you can blame
me. Yeah, you were pretty tough. You were pretty tough. With all these entities that you have written about and investigated, have you ever been attacked by any of them?
No, I have never been attacked. I have had a couple of, you'll not be surprised or happy to hear that I've had a couple of fairly negative Ouija board experiences. The Ouija board. So I have had a couple of not great experiences with the Ouija board, but I generally enter into situations feeling fairly protected, and I actually do take some precautionary measures, and I try and enter into any kind of investigation or anything like that with a good measure of respect, although I will say that I was working on a book and I had an entire chapter disappear, which I blame on hobgoblins entirely, not on me, on hobgoblins.
They didn't want that chapter published.
It was about them.
That's so, right. You know, they wanted it to remain a secret.
Too revealing.
All right, stay with us, Varla. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast and take phone calls with you. She is our third and final Who's Behind the Secret Door panelist. And, of course, let's jump on board and ask her a question or two about what she does. We'll have her mention her website when we come back as well on Coast to Coast AM. And then I'll tell you what's in store for tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Varla Ventura with us. She is our third Secret Door guest, and one of those I missed. I got one right. I got two wrong. That's not bad. Not bad at all. It's like a baseball season for some teams, to tell you the truth. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Varla Ventura, our third Secret Door guest. Varla, what is it about us where we just like spooky things and strange things, and we like to get scared? What is it about us?
I mean, for me, it started as a child, but I think there's something very unifying when you find, especially when you, I mean, all your listeners out there will probably relate to this, but when you kind of find your people, you know, sort of like that that time in your life when you're exploring the world and you're a young person and then you find your people. And for me, those people were often in the pages of books or just that realm of the supernatural. It was just something I'd always been attracted to. I read a great study recently that said that watching a horror movie burns more calories than watching a regular movie. So I think there's something to that. There's something very unifying about being scared together. I think that's why we're, and maybe it's not always scared, but it's that pondering that question, that wondering, it brings people together, especially if you aren't someone who follows an organized religion, or you don't necessarily have a spiritual group that you participate in. I think exploring the realm of the weird and the unexplained really can tap into that element.
If you were to meet a banshee, a puka, a vampire, a werewolf, which of the ones would you want to meet and not meet?
Well, I think for obvious reasons, I wouldn't want to meet a banshee, because generally the worst thing about banshees is that it's indicating that someone that you love is ill and possibly will die. So naturally, people don't want to encounter a banshee because it's such a bad omen. So that, you know, that kind of goes up there in the I want to, but I don't want to category. But I actually am completely fascinated with what might seem like the most jovial of fairies, but I'm totally fascinated with leprechauns. I think there's a lot that we don't know about leprechauns, and there was certainly a lot when I was writing my book about fairies. There was a lot about leprechauns I thought I knew that I didn't know, and I just think they would be a hilarious company.
And you think you'd get a wish out of them?
I don't know. I think what I love about the stories that I've read about leprechauns and the encounters with leprechauns is how incredibly clever they are. And I love these stories of people who, for some reason, it's pretty frequent in a lot of fairy tales, especially those that kind of came about in the early 1900s, where you capture a leprechaun or another kind of fairy and you're really mean to it. You tie it up, you might beat it. It's very, very brutal. And so rule number one is I would not treat a fairy like that, right? I would never beat my leprechaun. But this happens frequently, and the leprechauns kind of always tend to outsmart. But there's something about the kind of trickery that they play. They do fall also in that category of trickster fairy in their own way. One of my favorite stories is about this man who captures a leprechaun and he thinks he's got it, and it's actually frequently not a pot of gold in the old stories. It's a purse, a magical leprechaun's purse that has a gold coin in it, but there's always a gold coin in it. So you pull one out and there's another one in there. And this man captures this leprechaun and he ties it up, and the leprechaun talks his way out of it and says, look, you know, I'll give you this purse and then I'll go free. I don't have a golden store. I have this magic purse. And so, of course, the man's like, oh, yeah, I've got the leprechaun's purse. This is great. And then he goes down to the pub. He lets the leprechaun go free, and he's got the purse. He goes down to the pub and drinks on me, dinner on everyone. And as the night progresses and he goes to settle the bill, he very grandly pulls out the purse and slaps it down on the counter, and with great drama pulls out the coin and sets it down. And, you know, the innkeeper says, well, that's not enough, but appreciate your, you know, starting. And he goes to pull out another one, and he says, ah, but you don't know, this is a magic purse. And he goes to pull out another one, and it's empty. Of course, because it's a trick. And if the leprechaun has a magic purse, he's gone off and he's, you know, scurried back to fairy kingdom. And then the guy is, you know, whatever, he has to scrub pots and he becomes the laughing stock of the village. And it's just this wonderful kind of commentary on life in Ireland in the 1900s, but also this idea that the get rich quick scheme that we're all looking for, the leprechaun kind of represents that.
Okay, let's take some calls. Let's go to Gary in Dallas. Here, Gary, welcome to the program.
George, big fan, first time caller.
Thank you, Gary.
I have a strange. Well, growing up, my mom and my aunt had saw ghosts, and we didn't think much about it. They saw a couple things as they were young children. But about 6 years ago, I woke up in bed. My wife is asleep. And at the time, I was a firefighter, and my thought was smoke coming and building up alongside the bed. I'm thinking, I got to get up and check this out, right? But it formed into a hideous-looking face. And, you know, being an ex-military firefighter, I'm thinking, this isn't right. So I'm getting ready to jump out of bed, doing one of those fight and flight things. But it touched my wife, and my wife started crying, and she's asleep. And I'm thinking this could be a dream, but now my wife is crying in her sleep. So I'm thinking, now I've gone from flight to want to fight. So I reached to grab this demon-looking thing, and it pulls back, kind of like with this kind of eerie-looking face, like, what do you think you're doing? And as I reach for him again, I start to call the wife to go at it. It pulls back, and it ends up going back the way it did. It ends up forming into a small cloud, and it ends up leaving the room. So I guess my question is, what do you think that was?
Good question. Farla, only you would have an answer to that.
That's a great question, and a really awesome story. Thank you for sharing that. I had a great picture in my mind as you were saying that. And it actually made me think of something, which to me that does sound very banshee-like, especially the fact that as it touched your wife, she started to cry. So it was bringing on some grief. And I have a couple theories about the idea of banshees sort of traveling, and as the world has, you know, populations have shifted and people have begun to live all over the world, that banshees, as they're sort of traditionally told, have morphed and have followed, and that sometimes what we see is a slightly diminished form of a banshee, so it might be giving you some kind of warning. I would assume you would know if someone got very ill or your wife got ill or something bad happened immediately after that, but I certainly think that, especially if it took the form of sort of a hideous face, which I have heard accounts of banshees specifically being more, I've actually had a few people talk to me about floating heads in regards to banshees, and I found a couple of old stories. So it has a little bit of that or a warning ghost, but I think the most interesting part about that story is that you saw it. And so I wonder if you hadn't been awake at that moment, you know, how many times it had come before, but for whatever reason, you know, the veil was pierced and you were able to see it, and it was afraid of you, or it wouldn't have stayed, or it would have stayed and come back. So it kind of disappeared. So I think
that's an interesting twist, though, that you believe it would be scared of him.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot with especially sort of So I'm not a big demon person. I mean, I've been known to meet a demon or two on the crossroads, but I don't always equate things that people consider demonic or evil with being that. I often think there's another message there. So I wouldn't necessarily say that was a demon, especially because I think you have the instinct to sort of look and protect with it, but it does give me that impression of something sort of banshee and warning ghost-like, like it was creeping in, but then it saw you. And I do actually think you hear pretty frequently of people having paranormal encounters and not liking it and asking the entity to leave, or saying, you know, you're scaring me or you're scaring my children, get out. And that will kind of end it. So I do think that, I don't know, it might be a little bit like animals or spiders. They're as scared as us as we are of them, right?
Next up, let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Mahler. Have you in your studies been able to pinpoint things relating to a location? For example, Ireland juts out into the ocean more than any other place in Western Europe, and you got the Bermuda Triangle, which is a location. And also, do you think that these fairies or, werewolves, I'm sure you like the series, based on that book with Robbie Patterson, but, do you think they kind of, once they come out of the woodworks, they really come out of the woodworks type of thing? You know, like once you start to encounter them, they really will flood in.
So two parts to that. Yes, I absolutely think there are, I'm a complete believer in what is most commonly known as a ley line, an energy line. There are places where they cross. There are sacred places where they cross. There are churches built upon sacred places where they cross. So I absolutely believe that there are specific places in the world that have more energy, that have people can have more experiences. And I only say that out of personal experience, not only reading and talking with people, but having these experiences and not necessarily in marked ley lines like, oh, I'm going to go to Newgrange and have this experience. So I do think that, and I do think that water has a big impact on that, the proximity to water. I think that water has there's a lot of mythology around water. I read a whole book about mermaids. There's a lot happening there with the other realm the real other realm that is right before our eyes, and yet we cannot breathe in it. So I think the sea holds so many mysteries and has always for us. And then as far as things coming out of the, I actually saw a really, really funny meme recently that was like a picture of a Bigfoot that was just kind of like, this is why I hide from you people, because of everything that's been going on in the world. So I thought that was kind of funny, because I thought, yeah, I might hide from us too. But I think that people, I think it has more to do with us than them, if them means the other realm or the magical realm. I think people develop that ability over time. They drop their guard. You can do things to enhance your ability to see things around you that you might not have been able to see 5 years ago. There's a lot of things that you can do to kind of enhance your mystical and psychic and magical abilities. Anyone can do these things. And I think that people can go for, 40, 50 years of their life and then have an encounter, and that can change them. And once your eyes are open to it, you see. So I think the difference is in humans and our perception versus the realm that's out there. I think it's kind of always there. We just have to really develop that second sight to be able to see it.
Let's go to first-time caller Dave real quickly, Shady Hills, Florida. Go ahead, David.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Varla, she kind of mentioned that there might be some plants that you can eat that will repel werewolves and other entities from other dimensions.
All right, what could those be, Varla, in the last minute we have here?
Well, I would say that they are some kind of liver cleanser would be my first guess. There are a few clues in this book, and that's actually something that I've been researching, is trying to identify what plant species these anti-lycanthropic plants are. If you can drink from a lycanthropic stream or take something that then puts you into a hallucinatory state or a werewolf-like state, then something that's a liver cleanser. So I would say that things that are known for that, like thistles and dandelions and things of that nature, that can help purge your system, or something that actually makes you vomit a lot.
Varla, we are out of time. Get us your website, please.
Yeah, on that note, varlaventura.net. And thank you so much. What a fun and surprising night.
Oh, it really is. It really is. At least I know you in person, right?
Yeah, sure.
You got it. Varla Ventura, she was our third secret door guest. I got one right out of three. Oh, well, that's batting 333 in baseball, I guess. That's not bad, huh? Not bad at all. Stick with us tomorrow. We've got another series of great programs for you all week long. And tomorrow on the program, my guests will be John Truman Wolf talking about the coming financial crisis. And then, of course, we've got something special for you at Coast to Coast. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.